Never felt less alone than I do right now. Never more like I was out of the closet. And the only thing that seems worse than never coming out is the thought of having to get back in it. And I'll never.
Hello, CITR 101.9 FM listeners. Thanks for tuning in to the second episode of Sounds Gammon, that radio show brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM's LGBTQ2SIA+ Collective. We are broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded Musqueam territories. My name is June. I am the coordinator of this collective, and today's show is centered around trans voices in light of Trans Awareness Month. Now, originally, we were aiming to dedicate this episode to Trans Day of Remembrance, or TDOR, but some production delays slash difficulties pushed this episode a little behind schedule. Nevertheless, as a collective of mostly cisgender or gender non-binary people, we cannot speak on behalf of trans folks, but we still wanted to host individuals who identify as trans to speak about the joys and journeys relating to the experiences. Our episode today features a short history of Trans Day of Remembrance, which is what Trans Awareness Month grew out of, then an interview with Kip Chow and Alice Gonzalez, who talk about founding the student-run UBC Trans Mentorship Program that launched this year, and finishing off with an interview with Jimmy, a trans man and UBC student, who speaks to us a bit about his transition and personal experiences. Before we delve into today's episode, I want to put a content warning for transphobia and violence against trans people in this episode, especially in the part when Grace and I cover the history of Trans Day of Remembrance. I also want to mention that while we certainly welcome and invite all queer identities, our collective currently doesn't have trans, two-spirit, intersex, or asexual members helping to coordinate the show. We are all settlers and cannot speak to the experiences of Indigenous or Black folks, and especially Indigenous and Black trans femmes and sex workers who face systemic oppressions and violence at horrific proportions. We are working to grow our collective to better and more accurately reflect the lives and experiences of Black and Indigenous, gender diverse, and 2SLGBTQIA+ identities. If you're interested in joining, please contact us at lgbtqiacollective@citr.ca. We'll be back right after the break.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Everybody Is In provides relief to the COVID-19 crisis by delivering goods and services to residents of the downtown east side. And we need donations. Right now, we are looking for protective personal equipment, sanitation supplies, non-perishable food, and hygiene items. You can email everybodyisin2020donations@gmail.com to make a donation, or go to dtesresponse.ca for more information. Everybody Is In is funded by Downtown Eastside Response through diversity, arts, music, and entertainment.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Grace. My pronouns are they, them.
And I'm Jiyoon, and my pronouns are she, her.
And to start off the show today, we're going to give a bit of history and background around Trans Day of Remembrance.
We want to put a content warning for violence against trans people. This is an upsetting story, and if you need to, you can skip over this part and return after the break, where you will return to Tintin interviewing the folks at UBC Trans Mentorship. I think a lot of people know about a lot of dates of observances for the queer community, including TDOR, but even we don't know a lot of queer history as queer people and how certain things came to be, so we thought it would be good to talk about the origins of Trans Day of Remembrance. So the Trans Day of Remembrance began as a vigil for a murdered Black trans woman, Rita Hester. She was born on November 30th, 1963, and grew up in Hartford, Connecticut, before moving to Boston, Massachusetts, in her 20s so that she could make her gender transition permanent. According to an NBC or News article by Kate Sosin, in Boston, Rita found community not only in the transgender community, but also in the city's rock scene. She also frequently hung out in her neighborhood's straight and gay bars, in particular Jacques, which was a gay bar known for its drag shows, where a longtime bartender actually remembers her as a super happy person who got up to dance a lot. And Rita was also known to have frequently traveled to Greece and had a cat and a boa constrictor as pets. Rita was found murdered in her apartment in Alston, Massachusetts on November 28, 1998. It was 2 days before her 35th birthday. According to that same news article by NBC, police were dispatched to Rita's apartment 7 minutes after a call about a fight at the apartment was received. Rita was found alive, but more than an hour had passed between the time that police were dispatched and an ambulance was called to take Rita to the hospital. A next-door neighbor would later tell the Hustlers that she had called the police. She quotes, "They took a long time to enter the apartment when the back door was opened. The police report listed Rita Hester as a male by the name of John Doe, and again to this day, Rita's murder has been unsolved." Because Rita was very active in her community, a lot of people were mourning her, and there was also a lot of media around the murder. But unfortunately, there was a lot of misgendering of Rita in the media, including this one LGBTQ newspaper called Bay Windows that referred to Rita as a transgender man and misgendered her throughout an article covering her death. In response to this, there was a protest organized by trans activists at Bay Windows less than a week after her death. Other more mainstream papers like the Boston Herald and the Boston Globe also misgendered Rita in their reportings. Protests were held there as well, and they still struggled to get the media to use correct pronouns when talking about Rita. Regarding Rita's misgendering of media reportings, Nancy Nangaroni, a transgender activist who wrote about Rita's death, noted, "The media reporting since Rita's death has not hurt Rita. The killer's knife ended all of her suffering on this earth, and Rita's family refers to Rita as a son and brother, and they take no offense at references to Rita as a man. Rita's family has not been hurt by the press. The hurt that is being done is the perpetuation of disrespect and stigma for transgender people everywhere." Many have noted Gwendolyn Ann Smith as the founder of Trans Day of Remembrance, as well as the web project Remembering Our Dead, which is now the TDOR website, tdor.info, which was created to honor transgender homicide victims. Smith organized a candlelight vigil in honor of Rita Hester in San Francisco in 1999, which was a year after her death.
And I believe Gwendolyn Ann Smith was also a trans woman, right?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Gwendolyn was also a trans woman, and the web project kind of started out as just like naming off the trans people who were killed in that year. And
quoting from the Union of BC Indian Chiefs TDOR statement this year, Rita's death has since mobilized an international movement to humanize and protect transgender lives in the face of the systemic intolerance and ignorance entrenched within media, police, institutions, and the wider public. And while we should be fighting for trans lives every day, for many people, TDOR represents the only opportunity to grieve publicly and is the only visible gathering that they can participate in. In so-called Canada, we must also advocate for putting an end to the violence and discrimination that intersects the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls crisis, and also the hate crimes committed against the gender diverse and 2S LGBTQ plus communities. Some resources that we've gathered for trans folks, which is by no means exhaustive. There's a really excellent document called the UBC Trans and Non-Binary Student Guide, created by a team of trans and non-binary students. And in addition to being a really great resource for trans and non-binary students, it's also an important read for cisgender folks that want to better support their trans and non-binary peers. This document will be linked in the show description, and they have a list of on-campus resources and student associations and clubs for trans and non-binary students, including BBC Pride Collective and BBC Trans Mentorship, from whom you'll hear an interview later. And in the Lower Mainland, the TransCare BC website has a peer support directory for support groups and services across BC for trans, gender diverse, and two-spirit community members and their parents, caregivers, and support networks. The link to the directory is also linked in the show description as well for your reference. And if you have any other helpful resources that you know of that we haven't mentioned, we would love to hear it. Please send us either an email at lgbtqiacollective@citr.ca, or you can slide into our DMs at SoundsGayShow.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Feels like a vortex, all covered in Gore-Tex. Don't look at your tex.
Do you like that? How about that? Mondays, 5 p.m. Deliberate Noise. Nina Panini, special guest Claire. Local, new, hot, upcoming shows, toilets, friendship. Mondays at 5. CITR. Be there. Be there.
One, two, three.
Be there.
Hello, and welcome back from the break. In this next segment, I, Tintin, will be speaking with the Trans Mentorship Program at UBC. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy, and thanks for sticking around.
Sweet. Okay, well, thanks, Alex and Kip, for making time for me today. I guess I just wanted to start with maybe like a round of pronouns and names and maybe something else that you want to say, like your major or, I don't know, like things that you do in the community and at UBC. Yeah.
Okay. I'm Kip. I use they, them. I'm a fourth year student, double majoring in psychology and English literature. I am the current program coordinator for the UBC Trans Mentorship Program.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Alex. I use he, him, and they, them pronouns. I'm in my fourth and hopefully final year of materials engineering.
So I wanted to start off by asking you folks about the issue or the topic at hand, which is the Trans Mentorship Program. Yeah, can either of you kind of give me a brief overview as to what it is and maybe what the program does for students?
Essentially, what the UBC Trans Mentorship Program does is that it pairs, we'll say, what we call more experienced trans students, not necessarily in terms of age, but more about knowing about transition. Maybe they've medically transitioned, maybe they are quote unquote done their transition, but essentially they're more knowledgeable. So we combine these more experienced people with less knowledgeable, maybe newer to discovering that they're trans. So we combine these two people and they engage in a mentoring relationship with each other where they learn from each other and kind of build that relationship with another trans person that they may not necessarily be able to do outside of it.
Can I ask you where the idea came from or what inspired the creation of this program? Because it's really interesting and I feel like I've never heard of anything like that, at least at UBC from when I was a student.
So this program was just kind of, it started as just kind of a passing thought that I had, like thinking about how nice it would be if I had had somebody while I was in university or even in high school that I knew that was trans that I could talk to about, I don't know, everyday things, transition things, and just know that there's another trans person out there to talk to. Personally, I didn't know a lot of other trans people when I was going through my degree, and most of them were around the same stage or not as far along in their transition as me, and so it was kind of isolating. And then after that passing thought, I was like, well, actually, we could probably have the resources to do this. You know, the Equity Office is quite supportive. And thankfully, I'm connected to them through the Trans Task Force. And so I put out a call for people who might be interested in putting something like this together, and people were interested. So it happened.
Can I ask you what the like experience of, or like establishing this program was like? So you had this idea that was proposed to the Equity Office, and then was it just like up to you after that, or?
Yeah, so at the beginning, I first contacted someone within the Equity Office and I was like, hey, like, this is an idea I have. Do you think it's a good idea? Like, do you think something like this could work at UBC? And they're basically like, yeah, it would work. You should reach out to other people and see if they'd be interested. And so I did. So as I said, I'm part of the Trans and Two-Spirit Task Force that's run through the Equity Office. So I reached out to some other students and faculty who were interested through there. And I reached out to my friends. And the way we started was basically just doing some brainstorming and setting up our plan for the creation. So this happened over the summer of 2020. We were meeting virtually. And we planned kind of like how we wanted the program to run ourselves. And in terms of like being recognized on campus and maybe financial help, those were things that we asked the Equity Office for help for. So our club is not actually an AMS club because it's only open for trans students, and AMS clubs have to be open for everybody unless they're part of the resource groups. So the Equity Office is our kind of our sponsor in a sense. And really the way that we engaged with them was just with that one person that I initially reached out to, and they have been super helpful.
So in terms of this program, is there a gap that this program seeks to fill at UBC? I know that to me, it sounds like a bit of like a peer support program as well as, you know, like identity-based one and one that seeks to like provide solidarity and like guidance to people who are of like an equity-seeking group. What is the aim or like goal for this program, and like what gaps does it seek to fill, basically?
For starters, UBC, as we all know, is large. Making friends is hard, therefore even harder to make friends with trans people, let alone trans people who like are more experienced and kind of someone you can go to for advice, someone who can answer your questions. And so I think that's one of the main things about this program, and it's the idea of, yeah, you mentioned peer support. And although the Pride Collective has a group for what they call trans and gender identities once a week, it's not really the same speaking to a group of people as having the chance to build a one-on-one relationship.
Yeah, thank you. Alex, do you have anything to add? Like, what are the kinds of goals or like dreams that, I guess, like when you were planning it, maybe the intentions that you were setting at the time in the summer?
Yeah, I think Kip summed it up really well. Definitely trans people are a minority in the sense that there aren't a lot of us in comparison to the vast amount of people at UBC. So therefore, like the chances of having somebody in your program or in your year level that you are close enough to know they're trans, it's very hard to do that. So this program is really a nice vessel for finding other people who maybe study the same thing as you, or are in the same faculty as you, or come from the same language, speaking, like they speak the same language at home as you, or they come from the same country as you, which is really unique. And I don't think that's something that the Pride Collective or other identity-based groups on campus can offer specifically.
Can I ask also what the process of recruiting mentors and mentees is like? So do mentors apply separately and then mentees apply, and then how do you pair them up?
Okay, so since I'm program coordinator, that was my responsibility. And essentially how it worked is that we had a survey on Campus Space, the site for all the UBC clubs. But since we're, I guess, club adjacent, we can use it for stuff. And essentially, people put if they want to be a mentor or mentee, what they're looking for in the program, the kind of traits they want from their mentor or mentee, like what Alex said, like maybe someone with the same heritage language as you, maybe someone in the same faculty. Maybe you want someone who has experience with X kind of medical transition, stuff like that. And based on those, and they also can get put in hobbies and interests to kind of round out their profiles a little more. And what I did is then I got mentors and mentees to anonymously choose top three of the other group and say, I think I'll fit well with this person based on the things they want from their mentor. Like, for example, if a mentor is non-binary and they see a mentee that says, oh, I want a non-binary mentor, they would say, hey, I think I might be a good fit with this person. And based on those rankings, I paired everyone up in a way that I think has worked out mostly well. I can't say for sure, because one of the main parts of this program also is that I'm not involved with most of their communications because it's the whole one-on-one relationship thing. So it's mostly just them communicating on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so great. I mean, it sounds kind of like a like a friendship matchup kind of thing, which I think is honestly just needed in at UBC, where it's like really hard to meet people in general. So yeah, that sounds really great. How many mentors and mentees have you matched up together at this point?
I think in total in the program right now, we have approximately 30 people. We had slightly fewer mentors. So there are a couple that have two mentees.
And are you hoping to recruit more mentors this coming semester? Or?
Yeah, actually, we are planning on doing another round of recruitment in January. Same procedure as we did before. Probably we'll have less people, but that's just the nature of January recruitment. And yeah, I guess we'll just, you know, it's the whole cycle. We'll just ideally, we'll keep it going every January and September as long as we can.
I was going to ask, like, if any schools have a program similar to yours, or like, how did you, if you based off like a model that existed before, anything like that?
When Alex, myself, and the other people involved in the creation of this program set out and said, okay, these are the things we need to do, and these are the things we need to make, and set out, like, what are we basing it? We didn't really, I guess we based it on the concept of a mentorship program as a whole, as opposed to any specific program. But in the process of, for example, making training documents, because there's some onboarding stuff that mentors need to read or watch just to help them be better mentors, so to say, like stuff about mm-hmm. intersectionality, stuff about how to handle difficult conversations, that kind of content. And some mm-hmm. of that content, we based it off of UBC's Gearing Up, because they have their own trainings. But as a whole, a lot of it was just making it up as you went, because like you said, there isn't really anything like this in any other school as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I wish you folks good luck making the rest of it up as you go, because it seems like it's, you know, well, like a very necessary and like needed program at UBC.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so for UBC students, students should have access to campus space to log in with your CWL in order to see our program. But once you've logged into campus space, you can just search UBC Trans Mentorship and we should come up. Once the applications are out, you can apply there. If they're not up, you can always just message the group. There should be a contact box somewhere. And we also have a Twitter. I don't remember the tag though. Do you, Kip?
It's at UBC Trans, which is nice. Easy to remember.
Yeah.
Regarding recruitment, like what Alex said, we have main recruitment in September and January, but in the meantime, it's not that we don't take applicants, because we do take people on a rolling basis. It's more just like we can't guarantee that you'll get a mentor or mentee at that time.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
was just a lonely girl in the eyes of my inner child. I could be anything I want, and no matter where I go, you'll always be here in my heart, here in my heart, here in my heart. I don't even have to explain, just leave me alone now. I can't be held down. I can't be held down. I could be anything I want. I could be anything I want. Anyhow, any place, anywhere, anyone, any form, any shape.
Shadows that keep leaking out your house. You throwing daggers at the crown, there's liquor falling from your mouth. I spit on silk to find the silver in the slivers in your couch. I'm coming.
Show all outfit, craving. You're listening to CITR Radio. My name's William, he, him pronouns. I go by ephemeral. Yeah, take that as you will. I'm joined by Jimmy. Jimmy is a second year trans man. He's currently studying at UBC and a second year psych student minoring in GRSJS or intending to minor. Yes. Okay. Today is November 25th, which is a little bit past the deadline for Transgender Day of Remembrance, but we're happy to have Jimmy here with us. So Jimmy, how has Zoom University been treating you? How's your hobbies? How's life? How's life going?
Okay, Zoom University is kind of like harsh for me. I miss in-person classes a lot because like I'm an extrovert, so like I love human interaction. So Zoom University is kind of like giving me like that doesn't give me that. I have been doing a lot of volunteer jobs lately, and also like having a kind of like hangouts with my trans community a lot. So that is something that I'm, yeah.
Doing That's so right. great to hear. I feel like the only hobby I've been up to recently is going to see a tree at least like once daily. The trees are doing fine, by the way. Yes. But I am so glad to hear you're still part of like such a bustling community. It's still active online. Why don't you tell us about your experiences being a trans man at UBC? I know you've come out for a while now, but I understand that coming out is like a process that we feel like we're continuously doing. So why don't you tell me a bit about coming out at UBC, what that process is like?
Okay, so since I started university, I already transitioned, have been on testosterone for a while. So nobody actually knows that I'm trans. And it was kind of funny because like there was like a person literally said to me that like, I never seen a transgender people before. And I'm like, okay, well, right here in front of you. At first I thought that I was the only Asian transgender man. So I didn't know because it might be because I didn't talk to people, or it might be because I didn't come out to people that like I'm trans. So I decided to to come out and talk about like, oh yeah, oh, this is me, like I'm trans, and like I come out, I kind of like feel like I have to come out continuously because like people don't really know about that, you know. Mm-hmm. So
I think it's so interesting that a lot of the, like your coming out process for you is raising awareness online, and especially talking to people who may have not known you're trans, and being like, yeah, I'm trans, big surprise. Like, here's my post-op. Here is pictures of me being ephemeral. Like, I find myself having a lot of those experiences where I'll put up something up gay that's like really gay, and they'll be like, oh my gosh, he's gay. Oh, okay. I know we talked a little bit about like your post-op surgery and reactions there. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
It was actually funny because like I posted on my Instagram story and said like, oh yeah, well, 1 week post-op or something like that. And then like some people literally just like, reply the story and be like, oh my God, what surgery? Like, what do you get surgery? Like, why did you get the surgery? Like, what happened? Like, and then I was like, okay, this might be something that you are not aware, but I'm trans, so like this is like my top surgery and hysterectomy surgery post-op 1 week, congratulate me or something like that. And then that person, that group of people, they were like, oh okay, you're trans, so you got surgery and what do you do or something like that. They don't really know like how to react, and they suddenly they just become like scaring, like they just become scared of offending me, of like using the language. And I'm like, don't worry, it's fine. Like, if you have good intention and you want to learn, that is like, I'm okay with that. But if you come with a like bad intention and be like, oh my God, why do you do that to your body? And like, it's like unnatural or something, I'm not fine with that. So if you have good intention, I'm fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So much of that online space too is, for me personally, it's some people I'm acquainted with, who may have just known me through some of my work. Some of them are like really good friends. But a lot of like my online social media use is just like random people who may not know like that much about me. I use like Facebook or like Instagram for work and stuff. So when I came out, a lot of the reactions that I encountered was, well, what do I call you? A lot of that like unsureness about language was a huge barrier to like actually getting to know me. So what are the things that you kind of wished people interacting with you online or in person would say or do that makes you feel safer in spaces, either online or in person?
I would say, you know, when I actually mentioned earlier about like using the language and they don't really know how to use the language about like talking to transgender people. I mean, well, first of all, we are normal people. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird when they say like, oh, how should they talk to you? And I'm just like, normal. So maybe that's like something that I wish that people know that like is if you come with good intention without like any hate or something that you want to hurt us, it's fine. Like you just talk to us normal. It's not something that you have to be scared of like offending us, because you know sometimes we just want people to talk to us normally, not really like, oh, you're trans, so like you're like those some sort of like special people that we have to use special language. That's not a thing. Yeah. Mm.
When we were moving to Zoom University, I know there were some people who were worried about being outed because of the pronouns they accounted for at UBC. Was that, did you find yourself at the front of that? Like, did you have pronouns that didn't necessarily align with you, or did you have like a dead name you used on UBC official documents that they took note of? Like, is that what they called you in online classes?
No, not really. I actually legally changed my name already. So that is like a big, huge transition for me as well. So nobody actually knows my dead name that I'm aware of. Yes, nobody knows nobody knows about my dead name. So like I already use he, him pronouns for like how many years, such a long time. So yes, I don't really encounter that. Yes.
Earlier, while we were talking informally, it was something you brought up about transferring to UBC Okanagan, transferring from UBC Okanagan, right? Because you went from UBCO to UBC Vancouver. Did you find that there was a disconnect the communities? Like, did you feel a little bit more further than the community you built in Okanagan? And how do you feel about the queer community here? Are we friendlier?
Yeah. Well, I have been trying to connect with transgender community more. I went to like, there's like on Monday, there's like transgender people gathering together on Discord and, you know, like talk to each other. At first I wasn't aware of, you know, like that there is like a big platform on like on Discord that like we can connect to each other. So it was really, how could I say it? I feel the disconnection between the community in university, because like I already have the community that like people are like other transgender people they know me in UBCL, right? So yeah, it's just like something that I'm trying to connect more and then like trying to make friends, you know. Yeah.
Do you find a lot of trouble making friends during COVID?
I definitely
find that like trying to navigate all of these like dance parties or like queer hangouts, I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I find enough time for all of this, first of all? And second of all, like, I feel so disconnected from all these people because like I can't see them in person, right? It feels like the screen is dehumanizing the people I'm really interacting with, and I really just want to see them in person.
It's just like when you like text to let's say when I talk to people on Discord, or like, you know, somebody texts to me and it was like, so what, how do you look like? Like, what's your, like, how about, like, I want to hear your voice and I want to hear like your reaction, like the way that you express it, like in like not the way that like emoji or like, you know, like using like capital word and something like that. So I just want to hear your, like, that person's voice. And it's just kind of funny, like when I was like, look at it, and then I read in like flat voice or something like that, and I'm just like, are you excited with me? Or he's like, yay, or something.
It's missing so much of that nuance from like moving from in-person hangouts to like online. And for the UBC Vancouver campus specifically, I find it so hard when we were in person to find out where these queer spaces were, where LGBTQ people could just hang out and really like drop the nuances of like having to present or like having assumptions been put on us about being like straight. And I did everything I could to get out of those spaces. Like, let me tell you, whenever we were like at bars or anything on Vancouver campus, I was like, this is the straightest thing I have ever seen. A girl over there is like trying to get the guy at the bar to get her a drink, and never in my wildest dreams could I do that, like. So like there's all of this like nuance of like heteronormative behavior that I'm constantly trying to escape, and no one understands, and like all I have is online spaces to do this. I'm sorry, that's a William rant. But anyway,
I actually find that as well, like there was one time that I talked to people, I was like, oh yeah, I like wearing pink. And then like, I remember she was like, wait, you're a guy, why you love pink? And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. Did I do something wrong? I was just like, what do you mean? Like, do I have to conform to the heteronormativity, or is that something that I'm obligated to? I'm just, okay.
Do not hold me accountable to the expectations of this heteronormative world. But yeah, that's actually a really good example of like how we're constantly encountering violence in everyday life, and that I guess it's like gender roles with pink, or like, or women wear pink, or like men wear blue. Is there anything you wanted to add on to like the violence you've experienced throughout your life, either back in home or in Thailand where you were from, or here in Vancouver?
Yes. So the thing that I remember the most that I can talk about right now is that when I was in middle school, and at that time it was like an event that we have like costume competition or something, you know, and then I was going to win. I heard that like, oh yeah, let's pick Jimmy, like that. And then there was like another teacher came up and she was like, can you pick someone who's normal, like this one is an abnormality or something like that. I was like, the word abnormality that you used to call me. And I'm like, oh my god, like what do you mean by that? Like at that time it just feels so down, and like it's just hard, because like when you hear someone calling you an abnormality, you just feel like you don't have any space in you, like your society. And after that, when I think back when I was in middle school, also like I actually like went to high school in Thailand for like a year, so those time it was like very rough, because like in Thailand, I'm not really sure if you know about this, but like there's like a school rule that like if you are female students, you cannot really get a male haircut, and if you got one, they're actually gonna call your guardian or like your parents and say like, you should discipline your daughter, and you know, like this is wrong, and you can't get detention from that.
That is the worst call I could anticipate ever making. Like, as a queer person, if I was a queer person who was a teacher in these spaces, I wouldn't know what to say. I would be like, your child has a cool haircut and I'm mandated to call you because of these laws within the school. Like, I can't imagine what that experience would be like for a queer teacher in those schools, or for the queer child, you know? Like, and all for a haircut? Do you have pictures? Is it a good haircut?
Yeah.
Oh, so you don't have to show me that.
It's such a long time ago. I'm not really sure if I have like the picture of that, but yes, I can send you later if you want.
Absolutely.
To see. Yeah. But like, I remember, at that time it was like my haircut was like this short or something, and then like, you know, it was like I style it, you know, like of course, like I want to look good. Yes, and then I remember the teacher literally just cut it here, like, you know, to make it straight or something. Like, I'm just, okay, like, is that something that you can do? Like, this is actually like my own choice, that getting this haircut, and this is like my hair. But why you think that you have the right to cut my hair? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I was growing up and I was coming out to my parents, I remember a lot of their perspectives and values were reflected in the law of their home country. So when they were growing up, like gay marriage and trans rights, those weren't like prominent within the political discourse, and it wasn't legal till much later on. And they kind of embodied the values of that. You know, they didn't necessarily believe that trans or gay people would or should have the same rights. And I had to reckon with that for a long time. But did you want to talk about like the laws right now in Thailand and what's going on?
Yes. So we are calling out for same-sex marriage right now.
So it's not legal.
It's not legal. It's mm-hmm. not legal. So a lot of other foreigners, they probably think of Thailand as like transgender friendly country, but it is not. It is not. It is not. Mm-hmm. We have, how could I say, it's like, oh, a lot of us encounter oppression, and also like people think that we are a joke. So we don't really have any law that, you know, like protect our rights and in the workplace or like school, that, like I mentioned before. Yes. And when you think about trans rights, you cannot, like, there's no trans rights in Thailand. Even though like we are trying to, you know, like talk about like, oh yeah, we are human too, but they don't see us as human. They saw us like a joke. That is something that they can think of, because we are trying so hard to, you know, like let people know that like, yeah, this is like, since you have human rights, so why not have trans rights? Because like we are human. But when we are trying to like love, how can you say it's just like talk to government, like, you know, like calling out for this, and the government is like, basically like they just dismiss it. They say that like, oh, this is something that is not urgent. What do you mean by it's not urgent?
It's so hard to fight for your rights when your basic rights to like love who you want aren't even legal. You know, it's so hard to organize around those principles if it's illegal to marry who you want to love.
I remember, so when we were trying to call off a same-sex marriage, they were going to legalize a bill for us. And then basically like when they did like the first draft for to show like to public, you know, mm-hmm. They basically just told us, just like, if you are going to get same-sex marriage, it's not a marriage. I'm like, okay, so tell me about it more. What do you mean by it's not a marriage? So you don't get really, you don't get the rights as like, so for the heterosexual marriage, you can use the same last name, or, you know, like you can adopt like a child together or like anything else, etc. But you don't get that.
Ridiculous. Absolutely, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think that it's so interesting drawing that comparison to what we think is a liberal Canada or liberal Vancouver. We were talking briefly about your experiences in a washroom, and I think it was UBCO or UBC Vancouver.
At that time, it was in Victoria, BC.
Victoria.
Yeah, so like that was like my very first year in Canada. And then I remember I went to a female washroom, and then there was like an old lady came up to me, and she was like, you shouldn't be here. You don't belong here. And I'm like, okay.
Victoria, like, Canada.
Yeah, Victoria, Canada. Yeah. So I remember that, and she was like, you should go to the other washroom because you don't belong here. And I was just, I didn't know what to do, because I just want to pee basically at that time. I just want to use the washroom, and I just want to wash my hair, my hand. And she just said that like, you should go to the other washroom because like, basically like if your existence presents here, it means to say that you're trying to harass the other female people. You are not one of us. And I'm like, so which one do I belong to? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
so much of that feeling of belonging is like dictated by what other people are like are pushing on to like queer people, right? Like we are opening ourselves up to so much scrutiny on the internet or in person, and we're just getting so much pushback from the wider community, because it's the wider community that are creating these laws and holding up the values of them that allow us to exist in this world. And I find that so ridiculous, but at the same time, it warrants so much more broader education to like the public. Jimmy, I wanna thank you for speaking with me today. I really appreciate the time you took out of your time. This is Jimmy, he, him pronouns, second year psych at UBC. Is there any other initiatives you're doing?
Right now I'm working with Manishya Foundation. This is like a foundation that mainly talk about human rights in Thailand. So I am volunteering with them, and also personally I'm doing the job on just my social media platform raising awareness about transgender people. Also I actually did a takeover with UBCO Amnesty talking about, you know, what is happening in Thailand, and also like transgender people rights. And yes, that's all that I'm doing right now.
I appreciate that. And I think the rest of the cohort and the collective appreciates it as well. Thank you so much for your time.
I do what I wanna do when I wanna do it. I take out the bags to prove it. Hips to move it around and make shapes, yes. Trim the waist off from the waist down, girl, it slipped off. It's French tips wrapped around a dick. Did you wanna taste? I don't give a fuck what you think. You don't know me. You might owe me. A bitch, you'll never know me. Ask me how I got here, bitch, I work hard. Ask me about my luck. Yeah, I've been lucky, and I've been unlucky. It's both. Don't put your shit on me. Bitch, I'm special, you can't tell me otherwise. That'd be a lie. Who do you think I am? It's not who do you think you're dealing with. No, cause you're not dealing with. There's no deal. Bitch, it's real on my side. Go ahead, speak for yourself. Go ahead, speak for yourself. Cast the first stone if you wanna be a puppet. Better yet, speak for yourself. States. Speak for yourself. States. Speak for yourself. States. Speak for yourself. States. Speak for yourself. States.
You'll forget.
States. Speak for yourself. States. Speak for yourself. States. Speak for yourself. States. Move for yourself.
You better be fake. I'd rather live in taste. What's it gonna take? I could be sexy, or I could be sad and bad. Just to be sweet, what a treat it is to be non-binary. My Cherie T, bitch. We'll be right back.
don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Now the patriarchy is dead, and we killed it. If you identify as a woman, femme, trans, or non-binary, CITR wants you on the air. You can talk about literally whatever you want as long as you care about it. No worries if you have no experience, we'll train you in everything you need to know. Come by CITR and say hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday to help us never play Led Zeppelin on CITR 101.9 FM ever again.